And tonight on Coast to Coast AM, Jim Sparks joins us. The Keepers, an alien message for the human race. Stand by on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Jim Sparks and his abductions began in 1988. Initially, a very unwilling abductee, his experiences transformed once he was able to put aside his rage and overcome his fear. Jim had been completely conscious of these experiences, giving him memories and gaining some insight into what was going on. In the last couple decades, he's been dealing with the ETs. He has witnessed technology. And here he is back on Coast to Coast. Hey, Jim, how are you?
Good, George. It's good to be here.
Good to talk with you, too. Hey, let me get your reaction. What did you think of the citizen hearing on disclosure?
Well, I thought it was very productive. I think a lot of things that came out that we needed to hear about, direction that we need to go in. The people that were there were committed to, obviously, they were people who were valid, credible. The reactions on the faces and the responses that, you know, I heard about later, you know, were positive. So I would say it was a very productive meeting.
Yeah, I think so. Worthwhile. I mean, the more you can get this kind of information out, eventually something's going to happen.
Exactly.
What's new with you these days, Jimmy?
Well, working in Australia, and I'm spending a lot of time there. And, you know, I'm based in Vegas, you know, that's my place in the States, but seems to be I'm spending more time out there, involved myself, and I'm still involved in business, a little bit of market research, still in sales.
Good for you.
Yep. So things are going well there.
For people who don't know your story, Jim, let's go back prior to 88. Tell us about Jim Sparks at that time.
Well, I really was, again, a business person. I was a family man, committed to my business, committed to the family, committed to the home. And I worked very hard. I was always working, as I do now. And I had no real interest in the subject, except that, well, I thought UFOs were interesting, just UFOs. And that, you know, I believe possibly, as far as, you know, my knowledge of them, that, you know, there's millions of stars and there could be billions of planets. So maybe it's possible that something can come into our skies from another world. But, and I had, that's it. And then out of nowhere, in mid-1988, everything started.
How did that happen? What happened to you?
It was a reoccurring dream.
Ah.
And that's what I thought it was. And it was the same dream over and over again. It was a bit disturbing because it was just reoccur. It happened 2-3 times a week. The first 18 months were, well, anyway, I'll get into that in a moment. But the dream went I was laying in bed sleeping. Something was coming into my bedroom in the middle of the night, escorting me down the hallway. And then, oddly enough, we would walk into the guest room, and I would be walking through the guest room window into the yard. And that's all I had a memory of. And then I came back the same way in the dream, that I was walking through the yard and back in through the window and placed back in my bed. And that just happened over and over and over again.
You must have thought it was a wild dream.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. And, you know, it was it was disturbing, but I went about my business as normal. And, you know, it didn't occur to me that anything, you know, extraterrestrial was going on, at least. And then one particular evening, George, I actually realized I wasn't sleeping. And I was almost fully you know, I was in a slumber-like state, but I was walking down my hallway. There was something small to my left and my right, and I did literally walk through the window. And when I came back, there in my lawn, when the lawn is wet, there's these thousands of little honeysuckle flowers, and the window is a ground-level window, and that would stick to your feet if you were walking out there barefoot. So the next morning, you know, I was kind of traumatized by it, and it was strange, and I went into the guest bedroom, and I could see footprints in the lawn, and little footprints to the right and left of me, and one footprint was halfway through the window and halfway through the yard, and then the rest of the footprints had the honeysuckle flowers that I was saying stick to your feet. They were draped all over the carpet. But there was a window there. There was a screen there. There was drapes there. The window was closed. So that was, you know, kind of weird. And then with that, that's what I call going the easy way when, mm-hmm. when a craft is on the ground and they come and escort you out. They use a technology that that create a field, and I think that's the way they come through walls. They've been known to walk through solid matter.
Are you invisible to other people, Jim, who might be outside or close by?
In cases that I'm ever taking that way, I haven't seen anybody. It's always, you know, they pick the best hours at like 3 to 4 o'clock in the morning. And then we're talking about a suburban area. And so, no, there's not really anybody to witness it. Down the road, there were witnesses that I'd probably get into later. That's okay. Something I always wanted. But, yeah. And, you know, when they got me the hard way, that's another methodology of transport, and that was the riveting part, where you're laying in bed, whether you're asleep or whether you're awake, it wakes you up, and there's this loud sound. You're paralyzed. You can't open your eyes, but you're fully conscious, and there's this loud whirling, whipping sound in, inside your head, and it's screaming loud, and it goes faster and faster and faster. And then there's a sense of acceleration, like except for feeling like you're not pulled up, but you're being pulled down. It's like a 100 roller coaster, like a, you know, like 1,000 miles an hour down. And then you're screaming inside yourself, you know, I don't want to die, I don't want to die, and you black out. And then when you come to, you're at point B, which is on board the craft. Now, needless to say, as we discussed those early years, that was a traumatizing thing. And so who could I talk to about it? And I'll tell you what the first day was like when I got there, but who can you tell anybody about it?
And who would believe you?
Exactly. And so I went through a pretty rough period, actually, where, you know, my wife wasn't understanding. I was married at the time. And, you know, I went to different sources, and, you know, they thought I was basically this logical, truthful person that I am, you know, is basically out of his mind. And so, you know, the first 18 months were the toughest with them, and the first 6 years weren't much better. And then there was a transformation after 6 years. But the first day that I appeared, and the first day that I was pulled, going back at that time, all this is going to sound negative in the beginning here, but it turned out to be very positive in the latter years, as you know, as we go on. But you know, I found myself in the same place over and over and over again. I was sitting on something like a bench in front of me with this table with a screen on it. I could move my head up and down, and I can only in my right arm and wrist rested on this table, and the only thing I could really move was my right forefinger, which was to trace anything, meaning that the symbols would come up and block lettering would come up and symbols to match it. And I was forced to learn to equate the, or to trace the block lettering from A all the way to no Z's and Q's, which was in the scene there, to a symbol. And, you know, I would scream and yell and say, who are you? Why you have me here? What are you doing? And all everything you can imagine, you know. And yet, you know, I got no answers in that early time. And that went on for months and months and months. So, yeah, it was something. And I said I was in business.
And how old were you when it all started, Jim?
I was about 35 at that time. And that's when it began like that. But, you know, going to, you know, basically, there was semen extraction. There was medical procedures. There was tests for your intelligence that went on. I had no frame of reference, not told why, but the difference between myself and I think almost anybody there is out there is the fact that they never took the memory away from me of the experience. So, you know, I have never gone through hypnotic regression. I have, you know, and I committed everything to memory. And, you know, I wrote it in my work. But anyway, I committed everything to memory. And there was, they didn't spare me that. And most abductees, they take the memory and they usually need the hypnotic regression to get out of it. So that's how the first 18 months went. If I didn't cooperate, they'd increase the air pressure in the room, which made it a little more painful into my ears, and I would scream no, no, and then I would still duplicate a symbol. And that's how simple and that's how hard it was. But what it did to me was I couldn't keep my eyes on business. I couldn't keep my eyes on marriage. I couldn't keep my eyes on any kind of natural life.
Everything was collapsing.
Yes. And, you know, I tried to run away, to get away from them. I would drive hundreds of miles and check out a hotel room or a motel room, and that didn't work. I'd still get pulled. And I would go to a major city, several states away, and I'd check out a hotel room, in the middle of a building that would be maybe 15 or 20 stories high, and get a room in the middle thinking I would be safe, and I still got pulled there.
Did you think at any point, Jim, you were losing it?
I knew inside that it was happening, but the condition that I looked in and the way I was at the time, anybody that, you know, knew me would think, yeah, Jim was losing it. There's no doubt. I mean, I lost a tremendous amount of weight. I wasn't getting any sleep. And, you know, at the time I was a church person at the time, and that was years ago, but, you know, I went to the church, you know, about it, and, you know, all they could say it was demons and all this kind of stuff. And I knew it wasn't demons. I knew it was aliens, and that was all there was to it, but no one believed that. And then after several months of that, a year or so, I just kept my mouth shut. And, about a year and a half later, while this stuff continued on, I didn't talk to anybody about it anymore, and then everybody thought I was fine. And so I completely kept it to myself, and this was like a nightmare in those early years that, you know, I had to live with. So, you know, I regained my credibility again, so to speak. But, yeah, that's how it started off. And it's, you know, it's important to know, you know, what led to the positive things that are going to be brought out in the show this evening and the experiences, by knowing that it came from a hard knock situation. But over time, I learned why it's so difficult for them to just land on the White House lawn and say, hi, we're here.
Right.
And it's the human condition that makes it difficult to understand them. And for starters, you know, they're 100% telepathic. So, you know, I'd like to explain some of the reasons why it's just so difficult, and it's something that you have to learn. They're telepathic.
Let's talk a little bit about the occupants that were doing this to you, Jim. What did they look like?
They were 90, better than 95% of the time, they were the ones that were dealing with me were commonly referred to as grays. And there were two types, and I learned something over the years. There were the ones that were 3 feet high, or 3.5 feet tall, I mean, with the, you know, huge teardrop eyes and the large cranium,
mm-hmm, yes,
ones that we typically see. Well, I learned that those are worker beings. They're not aliens per se. They're actually made. They're half biological and half robotic. And I think, and I can't speak for everybody in the world that has had abductions, but I can say that the worker beings is just what they are. They're not what I call the true living alien. And then you have the ones that built them sort of in their image. It's almost kind of funny, but they're taller. They're between 4 and 4.5 feet tall, upwards to 5 in some cases. But they don't, their heads are bigger than ours, but they don't have quite the large cranium as the short worker beings. These are the true living beings, the non-human intelligent beings. Their eyes are large, but they're larger than ours, but they're not as big as that. They do have the skinny neck, and, you know, they do have the thin arms, and they do have the thin torso. But and those are what I would, again, associate with, you know, a living being.
Did they ever communicate with you in terms of, you know, vocalization, or was it all telepathic?
I never heard one speak.
No.
I never heard a sound. And that's I can say that for, you know, over the last two decades.
Jeez. Did you ever see them eat?
No.
Nothing. But they have the slit, right?
The mouth. Yeah, thin lips. And eyes that you don't want to look into. And not that it's scary, it's just that it absorbs you. So I never spend
time. And it's different, yeah.
Your eyes. Yeah.
It'd be like looking at a huge insect or something.
Yeah.
You know, looking back at you. In terms of where they might have been from, any ideas?
I never got an answer to that question.
So they kept their cards pretty close.
Yeah. Over the years, what I learned was you're only going to know what they want you to know. And that, again, I learned the hard way because, you know, I would yell and scream, and then they paralyzed my my vocal cords, and I couldn't do that. And, you know, anything I could get any answers out of them. As I said, that went on for quite a period of time. And then there was a breakthrough, but they're telepathic. That makes them difficult. They have the ability to create invisibility. They can work in one dimension, and their working essence can be, if they choose to, be in one dimension and work in ours at the same time, depending on what the task is at hand. Again, they can pass through solid matter. Now, this is something you kind of wonder why. Well, why aren't they really communicating with us face to face? Some of the things I'm going to mention that they can pass through solid matter. Everything that they do is thought activated. So any kind of machine or any task that they have is thought activated, and it works that way. And they can travel time. And of course, I've had that experience once. And they can travel time. And unlike us, George, where to them, I should say, traveling time to them is like an everyday thing. It means nothing to them.
You do it at whim, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. You know, where us, you know, of course, we would, you know, we'd be infants in it. And so their behavior to it, they're just, you know, exactly. They do it at a whim. It's a good way to put it. Then they're intimidating in the fact that they think 10 to 100 times faster than we do. Their mind capacity is so overwhelming that they can hold hundreds of thoughts at the same time. What do we hold? You know, we only focus on what we're saying or what we're thinking about. Maybe we can think about a couple things at the same time, but that's going on hundreds of thoughts, and it's happening 10 to 100 times faster. So they got to slow way, 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 way down.
Did they come across as being nice, whatever they may be?
Never at the beginning years, only towards the end. And then, you know, it was very surprising, actually. And the interaction is completely different from everything I'm starting with here. But no, they weren't nice at all. And it was this silly thing that went on all this time about learning this translate our block lettering into, when I say ours, you know, American block lettering, ABCs, into these symbols. And that's what they were sticklers on, and that's all they would let me have. And they wouldn't let me have any more information. So here I am going, you know, months went into a year, and a year went to a year and a half, and 2 years and 3 years. And from A to finally, when we got to the last letter in the alphabet, that I learned all the equivalent symbols to, which I had no clue why they wanted me to. I didn't understand any of that. And then I thought I was over with, and then all of a sudden they went to a number system. And it was the same thing, the equivalent number system, which was a base 6 instead of a base 10, which, look, I'm not a mathematical person. I don't know what base 6 means, but that's what it was based on, you know, with symbols.
All right, hold on, Jim. We're going to hit the break, and we're going to come right back and get into this abduction case of yours, especially the time traveling. That fascinates me. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, I invite you all to look at our television program, Beyond Belief, 10 days free. It's internet-based, but there's even a link now if you want to take a look at it at coasttocoastam.com, where you can hook up your smartphone, your tablet, your laptop straight in to your computer. Pick it up and set it up with your Royco. It even works with that, and off you go. But 10 days free. Take advantage of it. Go to coasttocoastam.com, click hosts, and the TV icon opens up for you. We'll be back more with Jim Sparks and his incredible story, The Keepers, an Alien Message for the Human Race. And welcome back to Coast, Jim Sparks with us. Jim, how long did this abduction episode last, and does it still continue?
Actually, it's at a different level. It went on for, over 20 years. It's been over 20 years now. And like I said, in the early years, it was extremely frequent, several times a month, sometimes more than twice a week. And it was crazy. But there were things that started to happen that led to there was purpose in it. And at the time, again, I hated them. Everything about them, I couldn't stand. If there was any way I couldn't cooperate, I wouldn't cooperate. I thought they were the meanest, nastiest, ugliest creatures that in all of existence.
Do you think they were all biological, or might have they been cyborgs?
I think the grays, at least this particular species that deals with me and I've known over the years, are biological. And I think they create beings to be worker beings for themselves, for tasks.
What do you think? There's so much to talk with you about, including of what the government may or may not know, and this time traveling you brought up fascinates me. But what do you think they want, Jim? What do they want with so many people?
Well, they have their own agenda, and I think it's an agenda. Their agendas have been going on, and under our noses, invisibly to us, because of the fact they have such amazing abilities and sciences. Their science is so good, it's almost like magic. And with these abilities, they've been able to work and do whatever it is they do in the cosmos without us even knowing, they're around, except for little peekaboos here and there. In the years, I've learned that they only want to be seen basically when they want us to see them. And there's, the messages there with the nuclear stuff and things like that has actually started coming into the picture as time went on. But they have their own agenda, and they're carrying on their own tasks. They are deeply concerned, as I later learned and have later been working with the things that they've seeded on this planet, including us. Manipulated, evolving ape-like creatures into the Homo sapiens sapiens that we are today, which disgusted me thoroughly. And again, that was the early years. I hated them for even saying it. I have a healthy skepticism of them, and it's always been strong against them. And anyway, as this thing flowered, It started going places, and I started seeing more what they were doing and more what they want from us, which is basically it led into this. And it was a way that it, George, that it led into it that gives us some depth, gives us the story of what had taken place and what's been happening over the years, real meaning and depth and better understanding. Because like I was saying again, if you can just picture yourself with something that sees you as you are, and not the facade we as human beings are. And what I mean by that, this is a normal, natural thing. You have your inside self. I'm going to get a little personal about us, not you necessarily or me, but personal about, just human behavior.
I understand.
And makeup. We have our private inside self that the world doesn't know about. And very few people that you know and could be very, very close don't know about. Things you've done in the past, things you don't want nobody to know, the mistakes you've made. And, when we go about our lives and we're interacting with people and strangers and business and whatever we may be doing, they don't know. We put up a facade that doesn't really know the inside of us. Even though, don't get me wrong, everybody, there's naturally, people who are candid and so forth, but that's the facade. But inside's the real you. When these beings communicate with us, when they do communicate, they can't see the facade. They don't know how to see the facade. They can only communicate with what you are inside. And that's extremely, extremely, extremely intimidating. There's absolutely no privacy about yourself. They're sparing these people when they take the memory away from them in the abduction. They're giving them a message. They don't want them. Some of them are traumatized. Some of them like it. And some of them don't want to lose the memory, but they have to take the memory away because we would be concentrating more on the messenger and not the message. But just that in itself is extremely intimidating. And it took me years to be able to feel comfortable about being around these things. And another reason that makes it difficult, not to say that all of us can't learn these things, because the point is to evolve. And which, you know, as I go into this, it'll make, you know, it'll have more depth and make more sense. The fact that they can think so fast and they can do all these things, and the fact that they radiate a natural energy. This is another one that you got to overcome. And again, this stuff is going to sound fearful and negative, but again, you adapt, and it's just. See, the point I'm making is why it's so difficult to be around them. Sure. And why they just don't show up and say hello.
Did they have like an agenda planned in stages, Jim?
Yes, they do. And actually, the agenda, as I get into this, is something that we, and when I say we, leaders and those who are in control, completely didn't get... We broke every agreement that you could possibly have, and they get the bad rap for it, is the bottom line. And but it something had to happen, and that this transformation had to take place in order for me to share this. And I know some of this may be hard to believe or hard to understand, and I respect it.
The human mind rejects this primarily, doesn't it?
It can't help itself. I mean, when you think about it, if they're 100 feet away, if you're sitting up, you sit up straight in your chair. When they get closer, let's say 50 or 40 feet away, your heart starts racing like you wouldn't believe it. Your respiration goes up. You become stiff and in a paralytic state. And then when they're very close to you, you can't move. You're frozen. And now here, this is something that they do. And it's probably a natural ability, a natural defense system. And that in itself is so terrifying. Out of all these aspects, all these things I'm saying about them, that in itself took a long time to overcome. But you can overcome it. You can adapt to their nature. You can adapt to them being around you, and you get away from the fear, and you learn how to control your heart. You learn how to control your breathing again, and it takes time. And then over time, it's just a short period that you have to adapt when they're around. And you know, that's an extremely thing. Now these beings aren't emotional; they have no feelings. But over the years, I've learned that their feelings are deep, and their feelings are long. And what is the reason for that? I'm convinced that they don't die; they've conquered death, and that's something that we could look for. Yeah,
that is something.
They can be killed, but they don't naturally die from their science.
Their systems don't break down.
They found a way out of it.
Ageless?
Yeah. Now, there have been reports of other beings that they call the ancients and all these, but I have never experienced them. These are the ones that I've experienced, and there's some secrets out there that are meant not to be secrets that we can possess. And I think it can happen over time, and as I go into it again, it took time for me to get it, and I kind of come out with it this way. But they've conquered death.
Did they
they've
ever
conquered time?
Did they ever threaten you, Jim?
In the early years, they intimidated. I was paralyzed. I couldn't do anything. I was confined, and again, I had no frame of reference, and I didn't know why. The only thing threatening to me. Was in those early years was government, which doesn't bother me. I had a couple of experiences, and how they knew and why they knew, I didn't know. But we're talking now over 20 years ago, which they don't bother me one iota. I don't have problems like a lot of people do. I don't think my phone is tapped, you know, and things of that nature. I can freely say what I want to say. But when I was going through that difficult period at the beginning, you know, and I actually forgot to mention that, those are about the only people that ever came into my door and said something to me about it. And they were very insistent that I didn't talk about it. And in fact, it was almost a relief to me, you know, because, the most, you know, normal person, you know, with a good head on their shoulders with all these things happening, may start to question themselves at certain points. But I always maintain these things were real, and I was going to take a scientific perspective, even though I'm not a scientist. I was going to take a journalistic way of handling it, even though I'm not a journalist. And so I committed everything to memory. And so, because I knew one day that I'll be able to talk about this and get it out in a straightforward way, where people can hear what it was about. But in those beginning months, I don't know what the connection it was with the government, but they did come to the door, and they were cold and they were weird, and said, called me to the door, and there was two of them, and said that you have to stop talking about this. And if you don't stop talking about this, they said some threatening things. And then one of them said a threatening thing about my family. And I'm not violent at all by nature. I don't care to be that way, and that's not just the way I am. But I was in the porch of my house at the time, and I lunged forward and shoved one of them up against the wall, and because he threatened my family, and I had him by the just about by the neck, but by the collar. And he didn't even react to it. He didn't defend himself. He didn't move back. It was just the queerest feeling. And I just let go feeling creepy. And they turned around and walked down the sidewalk in the yard and headed towards the car. And then they turned around one time and said, "You have to stop talking about it." Huh. And so that was one experience with that. I got tagged. I got followed for a while. So here we are, and it just didn't make things more confusing. All these things were going on in those early years, those early months. The first 18 months were the worst. And then I have people showing up, obviously were government just by their behavior, and telling me not to talk about this. But what they disappeared kind of, into the woodwork.
What kind of an impact, Jim, did this have on your personal life?
Well, at the time, it was gone. Look, I had done a lot of things to set myself up in business. I was a small land developer, and I was an environmental land developer in North Carolina at the time. And my goal was to buy up acreage that was wooded, and before the big businesses can get in there and big companies. And I had a way of buying property that was a bit different at the time. I would go in and I would research property that nobody was interested in even selling, or they didn't want to sell. And then I would approach and buy acreage, 50 or 80 or 30 or 100 acres, whatever, at a time. It could be somebody who owned a farm that had beautiful land, but the whole idea was to get ahead of big business by miles as I saw a city grow. And I would get in there, and then I would offer, and I'd buy the property. But I have one rule in the bylaws and the deeds and everything, and any kind of community over there at the time, was you couldn't cut down the trees. And so you could build your house, you can, like, maybe 10, 15 feet away, and the rest of it had to stay wooded. And so the idea was, over the years, at least, you know, that property would be well. So anyway, I worked hard for it. Nobody gave me anything. My family was average as far as income was concerned, and I did it myself, and it was just pure hard work. But the point is that I had that going, and I was working it, and I had a partnership, too, for another business. And the reason I'm saying all of this is because I had to drop everything because I couldn't deal with it. I couldn't deal with the abductions at the same time. I'd go to North Carolina in those days. At the time, I was living in Texas, Houston. And they would happen over there. So what got me through that was a very good friend of mine. He passed away, which was a partner of mine, who picked up the pieces where I left off and carried the weight. So from what I had in the bank and for what that he could do on his own, on the partnership for that business, he picked it up. So anyway, I was a mess in that day, and that was it. And then something fantastic took place that just turned the whole thing around, George. I mean, completely turned the whole thing around. Remember me saying that I was paralyzed for all those years on board, and it was confined and completely, and they were hardcore and mean? I had got pulled. I like to call it being pulled when they take you from point A to point B. I got pulled one evening, and there I was sitting at my stupid desk at the stupid it was an artificial intelligent machine that could see your mind, and then you had to sketch the symbols, and it worked with you. It was the weirdest thing. I think any scientist in that day would have given his eye tooth to know how that worked. But and I found myself on the same bench as usual, and instead of the you know, going through the number system and the alphabet and all this stuff, there was a page of normal text about a friend of mine called Jerry when he was a baby boy, and then another page went into when he was turned into a toddler, and then where he went to school, and it was 50 pages of this man's life that I was reading in normal mm-hmm. lettering, which didn't make sense to me, and it went a few days into the future, and that's what was scarier about it. And I just said to him, "What are you doing to me? Why are you doing this?" And then on the screen, a half a page shows up with the symbols that they had was forced to learn at the time. A half a page of symbols.
Well, did they look hieroglyphic?
Yes, in a sense. Yeah, I got them. Actually, I've got them down in the book that I wrote, The Keepers, and you can see it in there. And yes, so I've got all. Yes, it does look hieroglyphic at some points. Interestingly enough, when I looked at that half a page of text of the symbols, I got his whole story within a few seconds, like. I could read it within 20 seconds, 50 pages of text, and it took my breath away. And I went, "Oh my God, that's why they've been doing this to me all this time." What's happened is they were warming up to me,
and you them.
Yes, and then one of them took a symbol about the size of a 50-cent piece in a circle, and flashed it before my eyes. And in a split second, I got the whole story with all the meaning of this man's life. So it was sort of a shorthand version. Now, here's a way to relate to this, George. Think of any movie that you can think of that you've ever seen. Just think of a movie. You can just say any movie.
It's a Wonderful Life.
It's a Wonderful Life, yeah. Okay, they can put It's a Wonderful Life on that little 50-cent piece of silver, flash it before your eyes, and you'll have that whole movie in a split second.
Wow.
You'll know the actors, you'll know the actresses, you'll know the storylines.
Etched in your brain.
The emotion, yep, and you know it. So that was the first sign of something good, okay? And then it became more interesting with them after that. That was the first thing they did. And I complained, and I crabbed, and I, you know, cursed at everything under the sun for all those years is, why can't you guys show up normally? Why can't you just, you know, say, "Hi, we're coming," or anything like that? And then the next event that was leading to this interaction that got better, I had...
Hold on for a second, Jim. We're going to hit the break here. We'll be back.